1893.3 FM K1, and welcome into a Capital Call program this morning brought to you by Phillips 66. Senator Daniels is flying back from Washington, D.C. I had an opportunity earlier this week to speak with her on a Community Connection program previewing her time in the Rose Garden yesterday. Daryl Fincher joining us this morning from the only state legislator that is joining us in studio. Thanks for coming in today.
Well, I thank you, Charlie, and thank you to Phillips for going ahead and supporting this particular show. It's been a lot quieter week than it was last week. Last week was a little bit nuts. This week, we actually took a little bit longer break between sessions than we had to. Most people don't know we actually have to get the permission of the Senate if we're not scheduled, and they have to get our permission. So there are joint motions and everything going back and forth that we all have to vote on. But no, it's been great. I think one of the big things that really is not about making laws, but actually about participating in Oklahoma, is the Oklahoma Youth Expo was down in Oklahoma City.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually had a chance to go out and show a goat.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I had never done one. And, you know, as I wasn't quite sure if I was showing the goat or the goat was showing me. Anybody who's done this knows there's a lot of technique, and boy, I don't have it.
You do gain a whole understanding and appreciation of what ag students go through for junior livestock show competition across the state.
Well, we do. And, you know, just looking at everything and all the care that they put into them. Matter of fact, it makes me glad that here in Bartlesville, we're actually, we've hired an ag teacher for next year, if you haven't been keeping up with that. And we're actually starting a Future Farmers of America, FFA chapter,
right
here in Bartlesville, because it's just something that people need, and it was very good to actually go see that.
Well, and I've talked with Superintendent McCauley, and I'm not launching into an ag program dissertation here, but the students who go through the program are accomplished speakers. They have confidence. They have a lot of the attributes that you would expect someone who has maybe gone through the more formal speech and debate program, but they did it a different way.
That's right, because they're always having to stand up. They're always having to explain what they're doing. And it's pretty intense when you're out there with just you and your animal and the judge. So.
Yeah. And the judge can ask some pretty pointed questions as far as, you know, the amount of time that the exhibitor shows, you know, spends with the animal. They can even get into feed and nutrition and technical topics with the participant. And they've got to be on their toes.
Well, he did. And just tying back to something else, I judged the science fair a couple of weeks ago. And one of the interesting things is I found a young man who was actually doing a project on how much gas particular foods gave off. And I'm thinking, you know, that you'd feed the heifers. I'm thinking, why would you do this? Small fact that everybody who shows heifers knows, but I didn't, is that you want a fully rounded body when you go out there. So they have certain supplements that they can provide that can actually provide a little gas inside their digestive system, give them that nice, full, rounded body.
There is that the animal is at least partly judged on appearance.
Absolutely.
And if it doesn't, quote, look healthy, then the judge will deduct points.
Oh, absolutely. And I will tell you, Representative Strom did show a heifer. He looks like he's been doing it his entire life.
Congratulations. I'm sorry he isn't here. He's apparently over in Nevada County dealing with some, or I'll say interfacing with voters over there. I'm not sure.
That is correct. He's just seeing what he can do, what we can do from the state level to help the situation over there.
One of the primary responsibilities of the legislature, of course, is to get a budget for the next fiscal year. And I know it's a negotiations process. The House has its procedure, Senate has its procedure, and somewhere along the line you got to agree with the governor.
Well, you know, that's it. And I think one of the challenges is, you may have heard, the number people tend to focus on most is how much money would we have available. We actually have about $575 million more growth than last year, which is a little bit more than 7%. So we're able to start working on some of those long-delayed topics that we've had. And in the House, we've passed several bills for negotiation with the Senate. With that $575 million, we're a little about $8.25 billion total budget that we're allowed to appropriate. Now, what that means is, you may have heard of what's called off-the-top funding. We actually have some funds that are, or some funding streams, such as certain taxes, et cetera, certain fees that go straight to various departments. And then, of course, there is the funding that we get from the federal government. Some of it's matching fund. If we put in 10% in some cases, or 50%, the federal government will match it. So it multiplies the effect of the state fundings we do. Overall, federal money coming into Oklahoma is about 36%. We anticipate that to be the same next year. And that's about $18 billion for our total budget. And so 36% of $18 billion is still a substantial amount. But as a legislature, we're only able to appropriate, or that's our total spending, we're only able to appropriate about $8.25 billion of that.
And I think over the last several years, just speaking with Mr. Sears, there were efforts then, and I assume there still are, to bring as much as possible of that back into the legislative control, because after all, it is, well, both federally and state-wise, the House with the power of the purse and the ability to do what the voters expect an elected representative, particularly a House member, to do.
Well, that is correct. Now, every year we could go through and we could, because most of these things are done through statute, we could change the statute. Now, some of them are constitutional, and so that kind of affects how we handle those, and we'd have to go back to the voters for that particular one on actually being able to change those. Now, one of the challenges, of course, is that if you start appropriating everything, some of the money that we set aside is for future expenses, 10, 20, 30 years. Think about pensions. And we all know states, not going to mention any names here because I wouldn't want to embarrass any close states here.
I will just say that I grew up in the land of Lincoln, that back in the 80s, we were talking then that the state retirement system, state teachers' retirement system, was less than 50% funded. I'm sure they're not the lone stranger.
No, they are not. They've actually gotten a little bit better at how they're doing it, but we have some states that are less than 35% funded. And the problem is when you have a revenue shortfall, if you don't fund those, you say, oh, I'll let the next year take care of it in the next year, and pretty soon you're 10 years down the road, and then you've got some serious problems. And so part of this is we want to be good stewards of the money and make sure that we're able to pay all of our obligations. So there are no simple answers to all this, but it's something, you know, not necessarily pensions, but other areas that we'd be looking at.
Well, and again, that's it's something because, like you said, it's future dollars, and if you're not putting it in now or doing something about it now, then the problem grows.
Well, it does. For example, transportation. We actually do transportation on an 8-year plan. If you go to the Department of Transportation website, you can actually go in there and you will find maps of everything that they plan on the next 8 years and when they plan on starting it. And you can even find approximately how much they estimate it will cost. By doing it that way, we're actually able to commit for heavy equipment and all, you know, it takes a lot of equipment and a lot of people to do some of this road work. You don't just pick up the phone and say, I'm starting Monday. You actually do a lot of planning. And by being able to commit a funding stream that helps support that, we're able to continue to do that. Now, we also do appropriate some extra money to transportation. One of the things for our main budget, the part we can appropriate, 90% of that goes to the 10 largest agencies. And the 10 largest agencies, basically, they cover core functions of government: public health, transportation, education, public safety, and Department of Corrections. And so 90% of that are things that we absolutely, you know, have to do. And so those are the challenges that we have, and we have to go through and see, are we doing that efficiently? Maybe there are some of the things that aren't quite that core.
And there are competing voices of non-core services that are there to sell their need. And I have no doubt that they are legitimate needs, but it's a matter you get to prioritize those needs against those core functions.
Well, that's correct. And I think we talk about core services, but at the same time, Department of Commerce, I didn't list in there, but by golly, if you didn't have a Department of Commerce or Department of Tourism, tourism is the third largest factor in our economy here in Oklahoma. So while we may not necessarily consider those to be core, you absolutely have to have these. And that's the way. And we go through and review a lot of our agencies and boards and commissions. And some we've extended for another. We passed a bunch of sunset bills to do one more year because the group working on whether to sunset some of those wasn't quite finished.
And so that's, again, continuing that process for you. You get a lot of briefings somewhere along the line. You get to talk with the agency heads, and whether it's one-on-one or committee work, however it accomplished in that particular setting, they're there not only to answer their questions, but to, again, defend their needs, their 8-year plan, their reason for, I need this money now as opposed to next year.
That's correct. And they're actually very willing to do that. which I've been very, you know, they'll return my calls when I pick up the phone and call them. Now, many of the agencies, larger ones, have what's called a legislative liaison. And, you know, that person is, I had a question with the Department of Ed. And even though I had a bunch of contacts in there, it was just easier to pick up the phone and talk to the legislative liaison and say, can you give me this, this, and this? Because I know that's her job. A couple hours later, all the information came in, and I knew she was able to go around and work around people's schedules to get it. So we'll work with the liaisons. And that brings up another question in working with agencies. I know that Governor Stitt is looking at lobbyists, mm-hmm. what we call contract lobbyists. Some people think that lobbyists are in there twisting your arms and trying to get you to vote things. Basically, what lobbyists do is they do what legislative liaisons do, is they represent the interests of the agency. And some people say, well, aren't those agencies out there trying to make the laws to suit them? Well,
it's possible.
It's possible, but really the agencies are doing a public good and a public service. And, you know, when I work with our government employees, I'm always impressed about how they're wanting to do better for Oklahoma. And so while we have oversight of that because people elect us to have oversight, mm-hmm. we also depend on the experts and the agencies to come to us and discuss what their needs are and what they think can make things go better. And when the smaller boards and commissions who can't afford a full-time person just to work on this, they will hire a lobbyist. And I will pick up the phone and, you know, I'll treat the lobbyist like a legislative liaison and say, I need this, this, and this, and they go out and find it. And it keeps 149 of us sent into the House from picking up the phone and trying to talk to an agency director that may only have, 50 or 100 people in it.
Yeah. There is no doubt that you realize this is a paid lobbyist for cause or concern X, whatever it is. You say, I have no reason to doubt your information, but I'm still going to, you know, take it with a small grain of sand.
Well, that's true. And one of the things about lobbyists is all they have is their word. That's the only thing that they have. If you ask them a question, they have to be upfront and honest because they know that you will never trust them again if you ever go, mm-hmm. If they ever give you the wrong answer or anything on that. So they have their word, and when they come in, they will tell us who they're representing. They will tell us what their position is. If we ask who's on the other side of this, who's opposing it, they will tell us. Mm-hmm. And so we're able to work on that basis.
Yeah, it is a trust relationship both ways. Yeah. One other item that I want to at least spend a couple of minutes on, you and I talked about it just before we went on the air, a proposal, and there are a lot of proposals every year. But this one had to do with immunizations, and public health is a good thing. And there are laws across, probably every state has laws as far as, if before you start kindergarten, you need these immunizations. Before you enter, I don't care, fifth grade, you need certain, health checkups and immunizations, sports physicals, on and on and on. But a proposal that would have allowed school nurses to provide those immunizations, there was a vote on that issue.
Well, actually, it wasn't a proposal to allow school nurses to provide those immunizations. What it said is if the school provided immunizations, then you had to have a signed parental permission form. You think, oh, that's a good thing. But right above that, you're required to have a signed parental permission form if the school gives you medication, even for an aspirin. You know, and some kids do have other medications that the school nurse takes care of, but they have signed parental permission forms.
Some of them are prescription items that obviously here's the doctor's order, it's there.
That's right. And so, the school works with the students for that. But for this particular one, I ended up voting against it for a couple of reasons. One is, in the discussion that we had in the question and answer, there's always a question and answer session and then some debate. But in the question and answer, it came out that, well, schools really don't give vaccinations. And it turns out that for the example they were citing, this was actually a mobile unit from some other agency. We don't know where it came from. Was it from a nonprofit? We don't know. Who actually should have had a parental signature. And one of our members is a nurse, and she stood up and said she can't give a vaccination without a parental signature. So here we had a bill that was asking the schools to do something when the schools weren't actually even to give a parental signature for something the schools don't do. And if there's a problem with giving vaccinations, we ought to be looking at the people who are actually giving the vaccinations and not putting more on our schools. Though I know it can be popular sometimes to ding on them, but I just wasn't willing to go there. But now it goes to the Senate, and we'll see what happens there.
Well, I know there have been other services that have been arranged, things like dental checkups and eye exams that, again, there was not a treatment provided mm-hmm. per se that other schools have done. So it falls along those lines.
Right, yes. With the, you know, eye exams, we do some basic checks, scoliosis checks, to catch things that are public health and refer them to another physician.
Yeah. Anything else on your plate that we, I have a couple of minutes if necessary, but I know you have other places to be too.
Well, the big one is next week we start the committee hearings again where we're looking at all the Senate bills. I'll be working with Senator Daniels for one of my bills that's going over. Budget is under heavy-duty negotiation. It's going to be pretty intense all the way through the end of April.
Senator Daniels was invited to the White House, among other reasons, because of a bill that she wrote in the Senate, preserving and encouraging, I guess I can say, the First Amendment rights of free exchange on college campuses. I believe that bill is now coming over to the House.
Yes, and we'll definitely be looking at that. I'm all for the free exchange of rights. I do think our public universities here in Oklahoma do a really good job of balancing, you know, of supporting the First Amendment for anybody who wants to speak.
And I thank you for coming in and speaking this morning.
My pleasure, and thank you once again to Phillips 66 for hosting us.
Thank you very much. Daryl Fincher with us this morning on a Capital Call on 1400 K1, and we've got a Bruin Buzz on the way in just a bit.
At Phillips 66, we don't fuel vehicles. We fuel work trips and grocery trips and circle the cul-de-sac 23 times to get the baby to sleep trips. We bring you closer to the people and places you love. Also, the things. Like that burger you heard about that's too far away, but is it actually possible for a burger to be too far away ever? Yeah, those things. Because the road isn't what takes us from A to B. It's where we live our lives. In that space between full and empty. Phillips 66. Live to the full.
It's now time for the Outdoor Showcase. Here's your host, Greg Merrick.
Hello again, everyone, and thanks so much for joining us today for this edition of the Outdoor Showcase. Coming up on the program today, we'll take a look at our latest fishing report. That's coming up next on the Outdoor Showcase.